Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan. Today we're here with Trey Sumner, the lead facilitator of our All Together Boys program, and today we're going to be talking about what he learned about masculinity and his own experience in the Army. He was in the armed services for 26 years and did about four tours, and he'll introduce us to that experience. But we want to talk about how he developed into a pro-feminist male in the Army and try to help us talk about masculinity, masculine identity, and our evolution as men. So welcome, Trey.
Thank you.
So you and I met after you came out of the gender studies program that you went at Grand Valley, and you attended there and graduated and started working in the All Together Boys program. But prior to that, you had this incredible experience as serving in the Army and finding your pro-feminist wings, shall we say. And what I'd like our listeners to understand is that journey for you, and just to kind of start out telling us a little bit about the overview of your experience in the Army, and we can chat about that.
Sure. Yeah. When I joined the military, I went into combat arms, which is very hyper aggressive. And my whole experience there, I wasn't always completely comfortable. I was trying to fit a mold. I was trying to make my dad happy. Look how tough I can be.
How old were you when you went in?
I was 20. I didn't actually join until I was 20. That was what I was trying to, my dad had told me I wasn't tough enough to join the Army and I should have joined the Air Force. And so I was like, well, I'm going to go be a tough guy. And that's what I did.
Did he serve?
Yes.
Okay.
He was in Vietnam. He was in the Air Force, but he served he was in Okinawa. He spent his whole time. Yes, he served.
Okay. So you graduated from high school.
Yep.
Did you think about going to work or going to college?
I started to go to college. I didn't really have any direction. And my sister's fiance was in the National Guard, and he's the one that encouraged me to join. Ironically, he's one of the best influences that have gotten me to where I am today.
Okay.
But not because of his views, but because who he is as a man. He was one of the very powerful influences that I'm fast forwarding. I'm sorry. Let me back up.
Okay.
Combat arms. I did that for 10 years.
Okay.
Decided to get out of that. I did. And I went into aviation, which brought me the transition was I was a door gunner in a Chinook unit for a while. And then I switched into medevac, a transition I thought was going to be easier as an experience. What happened in that transition, though, when I got to medevac, that was the first time I'd ever worked with women in the military in a substantial capacity. Being combat arms, there aren't any women in combat arms.
Okay. I mean,
you saw women in logistical places.
Right.
But so there was a very macho, very misogynistic mentality around everything.
Okay.
But I didn't realize what...
Were you part of it at that point? Were you just immersed in it?
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
You just were absolutely. The fish swimming in water, not knowing
what... I did exactly what I was supposed to do,
and
I fit all the roles, and I did all the things.
Okay.
It wasn't until I got into medevac, and I deployed with medevac, that I realized just what an incredible boys' club the military really is, and just how difficult it is for women. At that time, I was in a unique position where... The biggest fear for people when pushing back in the military is you don't want to make anybody mad because you're not going to be able to advance in rank.
Right.
I did not want any more rank than I had. So I had no advancement ambitions. That gave me the freedom to speak honestly, not rudely, but honestly about things that I saw. And what I saw was just a horrific way that women were treated. And it struck me. It just really... struck me. And
what year was this? Just to give people a sense of.
Yep, it was 2009. It was when it was when we were the military was talking about repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Okay.
And so it was kind of a perfect storm that came together that I fortunately came out on the right side of it, because I had very strong feelings about don't ask, don't tell. I thought that was a ridiculous policy. It was stupid. And I strongly encouraged repealing it. And, you know, actually I made an argument with my commander and my chaplain for a long time. I'm like, we're saying that we accept gays in the military, but the one thing that makes a gay relationship different from mine is still illegal in the Army.
Right.
You know, so how is that open to,
right.
So I was in an attempt to support, my fellow soldiers that were not heterosexual, I painted my toenails pink for a year. And that freaked out a whole bunch of people.
So this is when you first started breaking out. Say a little bit about what kind of this male code. You said that there's male socialization that's bigger than the Army or the service. And then there's just something more specific, kind of a microcosm of masculinity that you were following and others were pressured to follow.
Here's a couple of examples.
Okay.
One soldier of mine, she was the problem child and they gave her to me because I was supposed to be the tough guy. You know, people that didn't just see me on paper, you see all my history and they're like, oh, he'll whip her into shape. She, after 3 months of working with me, came into my office crying and I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, you're the only leader that's never tried to have sex with me.
Oh, wow.
And that was, she wasn't a problem child.
Right.
She just didn't want to fuck everybody. And that's a real thing in the military, right. In a very harsh way.
Right.
Another soldier I worked with, I don't want to name names because I haven't discussed this.
Sure.
There was one person who was in charge of a lot of things. When you're medevac, it's like a commune. You know, you have to, everybody's on call all the time. So everybody, you have to stay in this area and you just have to work together. So you share responsibilities. And when he divided up the responsibilities, there were two women on our site, on our team. And guess who got laundry and sweeping every time? Because that's women's work in this guy's head.
Okay.
And he so many things that I saw that just were, you saw that misogyny accentuated, hyper-accentuated,
okay.
And put into place.
So it's that rigid gender binary that was playing out.
Sure.
And everybody had their gender scripts and that's what you saw.
Yep.
Okay. So then what say more about what kinds of experiences or relationships you had or insights you had or reflections that started your evolution or your transformation into thinking in a more, let's call it pro-feminist kind of ideology,
yeah.
Or support.
No, so on that deployment, you know, that was my fourth deployment. And having had experience with that, I knew it was important to have something to do besides your military job to keep you going for that year. So I always encourage people, you know, learn another language, go to college.
Right.
And I had decided I was going to go to college because I was 40 years old at the time and I hadn't been, I was 39 at the time. And I was going to ask my kids to go. I'm like, well, I should do it then too. So I started looking into what I wanted to study. And I was just going with what was interesting and what was topical at the time for me were these gender issues that were just shining like bright flashy lights in front of me every day.
Right.
And the don't ask, don't tell being repealed or being questioned.
Okay.
So that's what I found interest in. And that was the way I started focusing my attention. I actually had, there's a very clear aha moment that I had where I realized that, and I didn't have the words then to say why I knew it was wrong, but I knew that calling other guys pussies, there was something wrong. And I didn't have the complete understanding that, yes, what I'm doing is associating you with a woman and that's weak. And so therefore by calling you that, I'm just lowering women on the totem pole and that's wrong.
So this is kind of like the man box, the kibble.
Yeah.
Kibbles, you get forced into a box that's rigid that you have to stay in. And if you get outside that box, show some kind of weakness, femininity, something that's anti-male,
right.
Then you shame people with names such as sissy, pussy, to say stop being a girl, stop
right.
Being a gay man, be a real man and get back in the box kind of a thing.
Right. And so when I did that, I also made a conscious decision to challenge other guys who did it.
Okay.
And that started the ball rolling. Now
okay.
All of a sudden, I got labeled, you know, oh, Trey's the... you know, now I'm the sissy and all the names that came with it,
right,
and all the associations. The irony is,
so you were not, you were removing yourself or challenging the tribal script.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember there was one pilot one time, these guys used to go into, we all had our own individual rooms called Chews. It was basically a semi-truck trailer.
Right.
And they would go, all the men would go, all the tough guys would go play backgammon. And I don't like backgammon. And so I would
Realize backgammon was a tough guy sport.
It's a pilot thing. I don't know. It was their thing. And I wouldn't go. And they were like, oh, it's because you're gay. I'm like, sure. That's what it
is. That's what it is.
He got me. Which the irony was, I would then go into the rec room and hang out with the female soldiers. I'm like, I guess that makes me gay. Right. Instead of going into a room with you. I guess that just kind of, that reframed me in everybody else's mind.
Right.
And I was totally comfortable with that. And the irony, I guess, is that the military gave me the self-confidence and the assuredness where I was like, yeah, this is what I think. And if you don't like it, I don't care. Right.
So say something about, because what we associate oftentimes with masculine qualities like courage, like power, independence, autonomy, a real man takes a stand, you know, and so you're saying something that you took what was very masculine and used that energy or those traits to be a pro-feminist, because it took a lot of courage and a lot of strength to be able to stand away from the pack and deal with the pressure, deal with the negative feedback that you were getting, the harassment, the bullying, or whatever occurred.
Well, and I think that in my head, what it was, it wasn't, I mean, I am pro-feminist,
right,
but that's not what was going on in my head. What I was saying
at the time,
is
right,
I was recognizing that the posturing that I was doing, that the presenting that I was doing, that all these things I was doing, it wasn't making me happy, and I didn't like who I was.
Hey, what do you mean it didn't make you happy? What did you notice?
When this, I think as men, when hyper-aggressive men get together, we extract so many wonderful things of what it means to be human from what it means to be a man.
Okay.
You know, I can be strong. I can be tough. That doesn't mean I have to be a jerk. I don't have to be rude. I don't have to be mean. That's not what, right, but that's what we associate. And those things, I didn't like who I was. And I think that has a profound impact on us as individuals. Mm. And I found that when I made the intentional conscious decision to say, I want to be a complete human, and therefore I don't need to behave in this very narrow script because these aren't the behaviors that I wanted to exhibit.
So using the box is that you kind of, the process of busting out of the man box was actually freeing and liberating.
Yeah, absolutely.
It kind of gave you an expansive feel, or I was able to be in touch or express some human qualities that I was kind of suppressing that was causing me pain or hurt.
Would this be a good time to talk about this phone call I gave you earlier?
Oh. No, we're going to do that later.
Okay, my bad.
Yeah.
Because that translates well. You know, I'm trying to speak to where my head was at that time and not where I'm at now. So it's relevant.
Yeah.
What I knew is that I was in a lot of pain inside, and it was a lot of pain that had been inflicted upon me, a lot of pain I had inflicted upon myself, mm-hmm. and I also had pain from things I had inflicted upon others, perpetuating that cycle,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't like it. And to be honest, I got lucky. That's a crossroad, and most men,
right,
in my experience at that crossroad, go into an angry, depressed, violent, find a way to exercise your power where you can. I think a lot of men in that position end up, you know, you get to that point where you realize that we want to dominate the world and we're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So we dominate what we can, which tends to be our partners, our spouses, our children, our animals.
Okay.
And I didn't want to be that. I didn't like that.
Do you think that you, as you became more in touch with your own pain, that gave you the ability to be more empathic to the targets of Ben's aggression? So
absolutely.
The women that you worked with and some of, and that helped you then have the courage to speak up or stand up for
sure.
them.
And that was, and that's a painful process that's still painful today, because right. now all of a sudden I'm going, wait, we can't do these things. And these are things that I was doing, you know, that were part of, you know, my programming and my, programming is the wrong word, part of my learning process. I had to unlearn a lot of things. I still am.
Right.
So yeah, it was difficult. But what I have found is, and this is something that I try very hard to teach the boys that I work with, is owning when you're wrong doesn't make you weak. It makes you right.
Mm.
You know, it's, and there is so much freeing. I'm always like, I know it's scary. I know it is. It sounds scary, but once you really embrace being a complete human being, it's very freeing and very empowering.
Right.
And it just makes everything easier.
Right.
You know.
So we have the military. We always will, most likely. But how do you look at it today in terms of saying, okay, if you went back as a 20-year-old with your current knowledge and insights, how would you serve your country and mm-hmm. do what you're trained to do, while at the same time trying to be connected to your heart, to empathy, to respect? How do you pull that off? Give me a sense of whether you have a vision of how that can be done, just to kind of project, you know, this idea that we can do something that's traditionally masculine while being human, even though we know the military's, we have some questions about its role and purpose in an imperfect world, but I'm wondering how you envision that.
That's a really difficult question to answer, because when you say the military, and this happens a lot, people say the military and you think it's just one
okay.
big thing, but the military is so different. You know, it's as different as people, and you couldn't say society and then just come up with one thing we need to do.
Okay.
It's just too complex. But I think where you find, I think that in the more cerebral parts of the military, I mean, when you're talking with, you know, Air Force and Navy people that are working in NASA, you know, I think that that's a different set of problems than when you're dealing with the high school dropouts that are all grunts and infantry soldiers and bullet catchers. Because down here, we're not doing the same thing they're doing over here. And I think this is where you find the meat of the problem over in the combat arms. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. And it's a difficult problem. It's a wicked problem, because how do you take a group of men and quickly break them down, build them into a team? I mean, it's a very effective tool
right.
to do what they want to do.
Right.
The real question now is, do we need to do this? That's
as much as we have done.
Right. And that's where I think,
right.
And I think it is possible to, to be that tough guy, to be able to be that, I mean, firemen do it, policemen do it.
Right.
So we all, you know, to have that training and the capability to go do violent, dangerous things, it's important that we have people that can do that. But we also need to take care of those people and make sure that,
right.
that they're not, I mean,
or if we're putting them in harm's way, how do we, you know, again, we don't want to get into too much of the
politics.
We need
to front load a plan, not back load a plan.
Right.
Instead of waiting till people are suffering from compound trauma and massive PTSD, we should be, you know, front leaning that. My experience in combat, and I think it's probably a matter of cost effectiveness and ease of accomplishment.
Right.
There is much more, you know, if you take combat arms guys like special ops or special forces soldiers, they go through a lot more training. There's a lot more to it and more care and attention given to them as individuals. And in my experience, I have found more people in that aspect that are
right.
more complete humans.
Right.
Versus, I mean, let's face it, military recruiters prey on the bottom 10% of every high school class.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, dropping helicopters on football fields, you know, and stuff like that is it's a way to give a lot of people who feel like they don't have any other outs.
Right.
It gives them a plate of beans and a dental plan along with an immediate status place in the world.
Right.
And so they'll take whatever you're going to dish to them
right.
to get those things.
Yeah.
I did it. You know, yeah. that's what we did.
Right.
So.
Well, it's interesting that you're talking about firefighters and police officers. I remember working with a firefighter and he said to me once, he said, you know, it would take more courage for me to tell my fellow firefighters that I'm scared to run into that burning building. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I don't run into that burning building. I just do it because it's the right thing to do. But to acknowledge my fear would take more courage than actually running in there. Yeah. And I was thinking just that idea that courage is really about it's not about not having fear. It's about being able to acknowledge.
How do you acknowledge
you have it, and then you still carry forward with the mission.
And I have found, like I said, in the last half of my military life, or the last few years of it, where I got to a point in my life where I said, "Yes, I will embrace the complexity of what it is to be human," and that means owning when you're afraid.
Right.
And being afraid doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. It doesn't mean that you're going to fail, but you've got to acknowledge that. And what I found, young soldiers need that leadership. I think young people, we all do. We all look for that kind of leadership.
Yeah.
And, but it's so, I had so many young soldiers that were drawn to me in the end of my career. And it's because, you know, they were in an emotional desert, you know, there was just no, it wasn't there. And there's a lot of reasons why I think that's happened in our military, and it's complex, but.
I remember Shelley Irwin interviewing some paratroopers that jumped on D-Day. There were two or three men in their 90s. And I remember she asked the question, you know, before that, she goes, "Were you scared to jump?" And the 90-something-year-old man said, "Oh, Miss Irwin, we were very scared, but we knew we had to jump because we had these people needed help down there." And I just thought
that's
it was
inspiring.
Very sweet.
That's
very
inspiring,
sweet that these men were able to acknowledge, you know, as 19, 20-year-old men, they were scared as hell to jump, but they did it because it was a mission and it was noble to do it. And I think that's part of, you know, you see that no fear sign in the back of a big pickup truck to try to prove your masculinity, that I don't have fear. Well, real masculinity, full masculinity is about, you have fear because you're a human, but how do you carry forward with the mission and pushing through it?
Right. There's a, I have an example that popped in my head. I'm not sure if it's a very, very high ranking man in the battalion who also came out of some, this is a decorated man who has all the tough guy cred that you could imagine. And he had a lot of rank. And we were sitting outside. It was the smoking area and everybody was standing out there. That's where everybody hangs out and talks. And there was an ant carrying this massive crumb. And he looked and he said, "You see that ant? It's been traveling all day. Got all the way to here to bring this back." And then he squashed it. And everybody laughed. And I looked around, and this was at the very tail end of my career, so I had no fear of pointing out something. And I was just like, what are you doing? And I pushed back on that. And I'm not saying that to point out that I was courageous. The other men that were there afterwards were like, "Thank God you said something." And I'm like, "Why didn't you? You know, what jump in there."
Right.
You know?
The pressure from the man pack.
Yeah,
you know, it's just you don't say something to the man in power.
Yeah,
you know,
you don't push back. But but I tell you what, that guy respects me more than he does those people,
because
I'm not afraid to say that was wrong. It doesn't mean I don't respect him. I don't respect his rank. I do.
Right.
You know, and I follow orders. But that was was just a bad incident. Nobody would say anything.
Yeah. I'll kind of, as we start wrap up, I don't think I've ever shared this story with you. You kind of reminded me of something, is that I had a lieutenant colonel in one of my men's therapy groups. And when he first session, he came in, he said to me afterwards, when the group was over, one guy had expression of sadness, and he was crying in the group, and the guys were supporting him and such. And he said to me, he goes, if this shit is contagious, I don't think I'm going to stay in this group. and then he stayed. And then he realized that there were different types of courage. And he began to honor the type of courage it takes for someone to open up and be honest and real about, you know, this guy was, his wife announced a divorce and he was announcing it to the group and he was deeply hurt and sad and scared and he admitted it. And so this man grew to respect men who had the courage to sit down in a circle and share their hearts. And so I thought that was an interesting...
No, that's awesome. I love that. And it's and it doesn't make that man weak.
No, he still served. He was still in the National Guard or something and leading as a lieutenant colonel, but he continued to do it. It didn't, you know, stop him from being able to perform leadership, but it still gave him a chance to be a more complete human being by sitting in a circle with other men and sharing his heart.
You know, there was a young soldier who made a pretty big mistake on a training exercise with me, and that actually hurt me personally.
Right.
And there was a time gap of I actually got stranded somewhere, and it took me a couple hours to get back to the base. And by the time I did, everybody was terrified. He thought I was going to murder him. I think literally. and one of my friends, who this guy only knew me by he knew my past. He didn't know who I was. Right. And one of my friends had also kind of set him up for failure and was like, Sergeant Sumner's coming. You are smoked. And I got there and we sat down and had a talk for about 3 minutes about how to do it better. And I got up and left. And it came back to me multiple times later. He's like, you have no idea. That changed me.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I expected you. He literally thought I was going to hit him. And he was ready for it. And he was like, but instead we talked through it. And I feel like that just opened up something in him that was a cool opportunity for me.
It's a different kind of leadership. He probably had a great level of respect for you and you could get him to do a lot of things for you and for a good mission.
And I think that's a better way to...
Yes, yeah. Coaches can know how to do that as well. Well, I appreciate you coming and sharing. I mean, I think that your journey of going through that and coming in and going to the gender studies and us meeting at Grand Valley and you coming here and always keeping this collegial friendship, I appreciate you being willing to share that story with us.
And I appreciate you, Randy, and letting me come in here and talk about these things.
Yeah.
It's as good for me as it is for you, I'm sure.
All right. Thanks, Trey. Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating so others can find us. Be well and have a great day.